We're continuing with Canto 10, Chapter 12, and of course our celebrated verse, Krita Punya Punja, the cowherd boys being very, 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 very special. For those of you that are not familiar with this section, Chapter 12 begins with Krishna and the cowherd boys entering into the forest to herd the calves. And then there's several verses in a row that are just describing what they do together. They just have playing pastimes. Sakhas, they're called. There are different categories of friendship with Krishna. And the category of Sakha is they just play. And they play and they play and they play. And then this celebrated verse comes. It has four parts. The Supreme Personality Godhead, who is realized as the impersonal Brahman by the Gyanis. And the same Supreme Personality of Godhead is realized in his opulent feature as Bhagavan by those who have Dasya Bhav. Those who see him but think him to be ordinary because they're covered by Maya. And then the fourth is, but the cowherd boys, they're just playing with him. So we're going to hear some of that because this is commentary on that verse. And after they are playing and playing and playing, the next scene is Agasuras lying on the path and the cowherd boys enter and Krishna kills Agasura. Brahma sees the whole thing. The cowherd boys have gone to have their lunch. He becomes curious and wants to examine the limit of Krishna's mystic powers compared to his. So he uses his mystic power to kidnap first the calves and then the cowherd boys, put them in a cave, and you know the pastime. Chapter 13 is what happens during that 1 year that Krishna manifested himself as the calves and cowherd boys. The calves and the cowherd boys. And that what Balaram understood about all of that. And then comes Brahma's prayers. He experiences what he experiences and he offers prayers. So that's the section. So we're going now to Jiva Goswami, Priti Sandarbha, and some of you that have been hearing classes regularly, you've heard many of these same references. The thrust of it is the good fortune, the exalted position of the residents of Braja in different rasas, or different sections of the 10th canto describing it. Balaram is described as follows. This is Priti Sandarbha, Anuchade 100. References made to the kidnapping of Rukmini, chapter 53. When Balaram, who is Bhagavan, knower of everything, heard about these preparations of the inimical kings and how Krishna had set off alone to steal the bride, he feared that a fight would ensue. Immersed in affection for his brother, he hurried to Kundina with a mighty army consisting of infantry and of soldiers riding on elephants, horses, and chariots. No commentary, it's just the nature of his love for Krishna. Although he's omniscient and all-powerful, he knows Krishna is omniscient and all-powerful. His love is stronger than his knowledge of Krishna's majesty. Here, Bhagavan means that even though being omniscient, he acted in this way. Next is a text from the previous chapter. When this is the Baka demon. Krishna entered into the mouth of Bakasura. When Balaram and the other boys saw that Krishna had been devoured by the gigantic crane, they fainted, becoming lifeless like senses without prana. So their intensity of love is shown in both of these, the sweetness and intensity of their love. Though it is established that Madhurya Gana has a greater happiness, even Shukadev was suitably surprised by the good fortune of the cowherds, who had surpassed experience of Brahman and Ishwara because of natural attainment of sweetness. So I've not been reading the Sanskrit, but I decided I would read it this evening. Itam satam brahma-sukhanu-bhrutya dasyam katanam paradaivatena mayashritanam naradarakena sakam vajharo kritapunyapunja. So you'll hear it a few more times tonight. Translation. In this way, with an abundance of splendor caused by Krishna, they played with him, who was pure consciousness known as Brahman for the Gyanis, who was the Supreme Lord for the devotees with Dasya Bhav, and who was an ordinary human child for those covered by material illusion. And going back three more chapters, chapter 9, there's two verses quoted. Chapter 9 is Damodar Lila. And the first 21 verses are describing the good fortune of Mother Jasoda. The last two verses, Sukadeva Goswami is jumping up and down, saying, neither Brahma nor Shiva nor even the goddess of fortune, who is always the better half of the Supreme Lord, can obtain from the Supreme Lord, the deliverer from this material world, such mercy as received by Mother Yashoda. And the following verse, the Lord, son of Yashoda, is not easily available to materialists or to Gyanis with realization of Atma, but is easily available to persons with devotion to the son of Yashoda. Then he goes forward to another verse. We've heard this many times. Chapter 47. This is Uddhava's visit to Braja. When Krishna was dancing with the gopis in Rasa Lila, the gopis were embraced by the arms of the Lord. This favor was never bestowed upon the goddess of fortune, though she was intensely attracted to him, or to the other consorts of the spiritual world whose bodily luster and aroma resemble the lotus flower. And what to speak of worldly women? Commentary says, sometimes the appearance of Aishwarya, his display of opulence, in these persons, these exalted Brijbasis, sometimes the appearance of Aishwarya in these persons with natural sweetness nourishes the Madhurya Gan by astonishment. How can our son do such things? It's a secondary rasa of astonishment. Krishna is stimulating their primary rasa through the secondary rasa, astonishment. Here's an example. Chapter 28 is the kidnapping of Nanda by the agents of Varuna, and Krishna went to rescue him, and he came back and said to the cowherd village people, this is what happened. Varuna's abode is so opulent, and Varuna worshiped Krishna, my son. Who is my son? Who is he? And then they started saying, well, maybe he's Narayan. And if he's Narayan, do you think he'll show us his eternal abode? As if they weren't there already. So he showed them. And here's the verse. Nanda Maharaj and the other cowherd men felt the greatest happiness when they saw that abode. They were especially amazed to see Krishna there, surrounded by the personified scriptures who were offering him prayers. Paragraph. Because of its purity, the priti, this is priti sandarbha priti, he uses that word interchangeably with prema. In ISKCON, we're accustomed to prema. He liked priti. So, because of its purity, the priti of the young girls of Gokula is best. However, here is the general description first. Now, this is Brahma's Prayers, chapter 14. Oh, Lord, what can you give to the residents of Braja, whose houses, possessions, friends, dear ones, bodies, sons, life, heirs, and hearts are dedicated only to you, since there is nothing superior to you or Braja, which you have already given them? Thinking of this, my mind becomes bewildered. You awarded yourself even to Putana and her family members because she wore the disguise of a nurse. Next. There, it is seen that even the animals have the greatest affection. When Krishna enters Kaliya's lake, Kaliya Serpent, chapter 16, the cows, bulls, and female calves, in great distress, called out piteously to Krishna. Fixing their eyes on him, they stood still in fear, shedding tears, as if they were humans. Even the animals have an enormous affection for Krishna. When Krishna lay down, Balaram served him with affection. Chapter 17. Balaram embraced his infallible brother and laughed. Knowing well the extent of Krishna's potency, out of great feelings of love, Balaram lifted Krishna up on his lap and repeatedly looked at him. The cows, bulls, and young female calves also achieved the highest pleasure. And then his commentary says, even the plants experience the greatest bliss. And here's the reference to the same chapter. Having regained their vital functions, this is like after Krishna is released from the coils of the Kaliya serpent. These verses are taken from there. Having regained their vital functions, Yashoda, Rohini, Nanda, and all the other cowherd women and men went up to Krishna. Oh, descendant of Kuru, even the dried up trees came back to life. Because around the Kaliya lake there was all this poison and they died. But now Krishna's freed from the coils of the Kaliya serpent, they came back to life. More from chapter 14, Brahma prays. My greatest possible good fortune would be to take any birth whatever in this forest of Gokula, and have my head bathed by the dust falling from the lotus feet of any of its residents. Their entire life and soul is the Lord Mukunda, the dust of whose lotus feet is sought even today by the Upanishads. And then it gets a little technical. In Gokula, the ocean of the highest Madhurya Gyan, there are different categories of devotees. Those who are obedient, anugatas, and those who are family relatives, bandhavas. Among these two types of dear persons, the Bandhavas are the greatest because of having intense possessiveness. Now, our acharyas use this term all the time, possessiveness. You know, so here's a very simple way of thinking of it. Krishna, I am yours. And you are mine. Those that are the possessiveness means they have no material possessions. They have only one possession. That's their relationship with Krishna. Of different rasas, but there's only one possession. They have other, but you know, they're not attached to those things. They use those things in Krishna's service, but they're very possessive about their relationship with Krishna. They're very attached. So they say this word possessiveness again and again. So here's the translation. Again, it's Brahma saying, how greatly fortunate are Nanda Maharaj, the Cowherd Man, and all the other inhabitants of Brajabhumi. There's no limit to their good fortune because Krishna gave them prema, which is the highest bliss, eternal and complete. It is said in this verse that even among the younger people of Braja, Krishna accepts friendship, mitrata. That is said in praise of friendship. The excellent sakhas among the people of Braja is described. So now he's going through different rasas and the intimacy of love, and here comes the ones that just play with Krishna, the sakhas. Ready? Here's the verse again. Itam satam brahma sukhanu vrutya dasya dasyam gatanam paradaivatena mayashritanam naradarakena sakam vijadro kritapunya punja. Translation, you probably memorized it by now. In this way, with an abundance of splendor caused by Krishna, they played with him, who was pure consciousness known as Brahman for the Gyanis, who was the Supreme Lord for the devotees with Dasya Bhav, and who was an ordinary human child for those covered by material illusion. So we're going to hear the material illusion people spoken about some more. Maya, Ashrita. They've taken shelter of Maya. Maya Ashrita Nam, Nara, Darakena. So here he writes, Satam refers to Gyanis who realize Brahman. Itam satam brahma sukhanu brutya. Satam refers to Gyanis who have realized Brahman. The position of the sakhas was much greater. Those in Dasya realized Krishna as the Supreme Lord. Para Daivatena. Para transcendental, Daiva, the Lord, Etena, they attained or realized Krishna as the Supreme Lord. And look at this, it gives the Muktanam api Siddhanam Narayana Parayana. Sound familiar? Sudurlaba prasantatma Koteshvapi Mahamane. This is a celebrated verse. It's Maharaj Parikshit speaking to Shukadeva Goswami. After he heard the whole Chitraketu story, he goes, wow. How did someone, he heard the Vritrasura story. And how did someone who is a demon become so elevated? What's the story behind this? And he's saying, oh, great sage, he's listing different amongst all the categories, living entities, some follow Dharma, those who follow Dharma, they come to realize Brahman. O great sage, greater than those who are Jivan Mukta, and greater than those who attain liberation, is the devotee of Lord Narayana. This is Narayana Parayana, that phrase. Such a devotee who is in Shanta or other rasas is very rare, even among 10 million people. Similar to a message of Bhagavad Gita, right? Manushya Nam Sahasreshu. The sakas are even rarer than that. For those who took shelter of Maya, that's Maya Shutanam, neither the general spiritual form, the form of the Supreme Lord, nor shelter of prema were realized at all by persons devoid of Gyan, Bhakti, and Maitri. That's those who took shelter of Maya. Maitri is friendship. Since they were unqualified for seeing Krishna in those forms, he cannot be attained by them. Avajananti mamudha manushantana marshata. The fools deride me as someone with material human form. The first three lines indicate rareness of seeing the Lord in any form. They, the cowherd boys, the sakas, they directly played with Krishna, who cannot even be seen easily because of having the highest sakya ascending to the excellence of prema. This was astonishing to Shukadev. Paragraph. Though Krishna appeared directly as Parabrahman in human form, a form greater than all other forms ever seen, even to ordinary material people, by his all-pervading mercy, they did not attain bhava as a friend, though they could attain these other realizations as Brahman and Dasya. The sakhas played with Krishna as a friend, a form excellent with the bhava of a friend. Thus, they alone were the best among people who pleased the Lord by doing many pious acts, krita, punya punja. Among types of friends, this type of friendship does not exist. They are greater than all others. Therefore, the good fortune of these friends who play directly with Krishna because of special friendship with intimacy, pranaya, should be described. So here he goes. He's going to dive into the how special are these cowherd boys. Let the ordinary among the inhabitants of Braja remain. That is another good fortune. The good fortune of just seeing them is very rare, even for the great sages to indicate this. The next verse says, that's one after the Krita Punya Punja verse, that's text 12. Swayam Bhagavan Krishna, whose foot dust cannot be seen by yogis in samadhi, though they have controlled their minds by severe hardship from many births, is eternally situated here, directly visible to the eyes of all the people of Vraja. Oh, Sukadev says, how can the good fortune of the people of Vraja be described? This nourishes the greater good fortune of the sakhas. Thus Akura says, he's coming to visit on the request of Kamsa in his chariot. Then, so he's meditating what's going to happen when he sees Krishna in the pasturing ground. Then I will at once alight from my chariot and bow down to the lotus feet of Krishna and Balaram, the Supreme Lords, which yogis contemplate by intense practice in order to attain him. I will also offer my obeisances to the Lord's cowherd boyfriends and to all the other residents of Vrindavan. That's why Akura stayed. Akura was part of the Yadu dynasty group. And when Kamsa took over and he put Ugrasen in prison, many of the Yadus fled just for their lives. And Akura stayed because he knew Krishna was going to appear and he wanted to see Krishna. Now he's getting his chance. He's really excited. And he understands he is the personality of Godhead. So you don't bow down to Krishna in Braja. He doesn't learn that one yet. When Brahma stole the calves and boys, Krishna made copies of the boys and calves, but saw they were not the same as the originals. Thus, he himself became the calves and boys. But not being satisfied with them, he later brought the real calves and boys back after a year because of attraction for them. Got it? That's Priti Sandarbha. Here's more. How spiritual love overwhelmed even Lord Balaram's awareness of Lord Krishna's power and opulence is seen. We read it. Here it is again. That's this chapter 53, the kidnapping of Rukmini. Jiva Goswami likes this. It's illustrating the intensity of love of Balaram for Krishna, and he characterizes it as sweetness, meaning sweetness or madhurya eclipses majesty. Majesty means Aishwarya. He shows opulence. So Krishna, he knows Krishna's opulence. Krishna has shown his opulence, lifting Govardhan Hill, stopping Jarasandha's army so many times, single-handedly, and I mean, how many demonstrations? So many demonstrations. But his intensity of love is so great, when he thinks Krishna's in danger, he doesn't think, oh, he's all-powerful, he's almighty, he'll take care of himself. It's the affection of sweetness of elderly, brotherly love is compelling. So the translation. When Lord Balaram heard about these preparations of the inimical kings and how Lord Krishna has set off alone to steal the bride, he feared that a fight would ensue. Immersed in affection for his brother, he hurried to Kundina with a mighty army consisting of infantry and soldiers riding on elephants, horses, and chariots. Here the word Bhagavan means all-knowing. Another example of devotees being overwhelmed by love for Lord Krishna is seen in these words of Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the Bakasura reference again. They saw, they fainted. Then another references are celebrated Kritapunya Punja verse. And I didn't leave the Sanskrit. Have you learned the Sanskrit yet? I'll go back. Itam satam brahmasukhanuvrutya dasyam katanam paradaivatena mayashatanam naradarakena sakam vajaru kritapunya punja. So now the translation. The bliss the cowherd people attain. Whoops, that's, I already read that. The bliss the cowherd people attain by perceiving Lord Krishna's sweetness far surpasses the bliss that comes from perceiving Brahman or perceiving the opulence and power of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Seeing the good fortune attained by the cowherd people, Srila Shukadeva Goswami became filled with wonder. It's another secondary rasa. So then this verse, in this way the cowherd boys used to play with Krishna, who is the source of the Brahman effulgence for Gyanis, desiring to merge into that effulgence. It's a longer translation. Who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead for devotees who have accepted eternal servitorship, and who for ordinary persons is but an ordinary child. The cowherd boys, having accumulated results of pious activities from many lives, were able to associate in this way with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. How can one explain their good fortune? Then again, there's reference to text 20 and 21 from chapter 9, Yasoda's special position. I'm not going to read them again. I'll read 21. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, the son of Mother Yashoda, is accessible to devotees engaged in spontaneous loving service, but he is not as easily accessible to mental speculators, to those striving for self-realization by severe austerities and penances, or to those who consider the body to be the self. Shukadeva Goswami also said, Canto 10, Chapter 47, towards the end of the chapter, we heard this one. When Lord Krishna was dancing with the gopis in Rasa Lila, the gopis were embraced by the arms of the Lord. This transcendental favor was never bestowed upon the goddess of fortune or other consorts in the spiritual world. Indeed, never was such a thing even imagined by the most beautiful girls in the heavenly planets, whose bodily luster and aroma resembled the lotus flower. And what to speak of worldly women who are very beautiful according to material estimation. Sometimes the manifestation of the Lord's opulence increases the perception of his sweetness. This occurs when the devotee has the idea, how can this be our son or some other relation in this wonderful situation? And he gives, it's similar, I told you it's going to be very similar. So the scene with Nanda Maharaj and the cowherd men seeing the abode of the Lord, when they see, they go, and there's Krishna too. And they saw themselves along with Krishna, but they didn't see anybody else. That's because that's what Krishna showed them. Brahma, because of its great purity, the love of the residents of Gokula, the love the residents of Sri Gokula feel is very glorious. Brahma's prayer. My Lord, sometimes I am puzzled as to how your lordship will be able to repay in gratitude the devotional service of these residents of Vrindavan. Although I know that you are the supreme source of all benediction, I am puzzled to know how you'll be able to repay all the service that you're receiving from these residents of Vrindavan. I think of how you are so kind, so magnanimous, that even Putana, who came to cheat you by dressing herself as a very affectionate mother, was awarded liberation and the actual post of a mother. And other demons belonging to the same family, such as Agasura and Bakasura, were also favored with liberation. Under the circumstances, I am puzzled. These residents of Vrindavan have given you everything. Their bodies, their minds, their love, their homes, everything is being utilized for your purpose. So how you'll be able to repay their debt? You've already given yourself to Putana. I surmise You shall ever remain a debtor to the residents of Vrindavan, being unable to repay their loving service. So it's a little longer explanation or translation. It is seen that even the cows love Lord Krishna very deeply. Same passage. When Lord Krishna dove into the Kaliya Lake, the cows were overwhelmed, as described. The cows, bulls, and female calves, in great distress, called out piteously to Krishna. Fixing their eyes on him, they stood in fear, as if ready to cry, but too shocked to shed tears. That's a little different translation. When Lord Krishna finally emerged from the Kaliya Lake, the cows were overjoyed. This is described. Lord Balaram embraced his infallible brother and laughed, knowing well the extent of his potency. Out of feelings of love, he lifted him up on his lap and repeatedly looked at him. The cows, bulls, and young female calves also achieved the highest pleasure. And then again, the unmoving living beings, trees, plants, etc., became filled with joy. Dried up trees came back to life. Even the plants of Gokula were filled with love for Lord Krishna. For this reason, the demigod Brahma prayed. He wanted to take birth, take dust from the residents of Vrindavan. But it's a longer version. Here's the translation. I am most humbly praying at your lotus feet for you to please give me any sort of birth within this Vrindavan forest, so that I may be able to be favored by the dust of the feet of some of the devotees of Vrindavan, even if I'm given the chance to grow just as a humble grass in this land. That will be a glorious birth for me. But if I am not so fortunate to take birth within the forest of Braja, I beg to be allowed to take birth outside the immediate area of Vrindavan, so that when the devotees go out, they will walk over me. Even that would be a great fortune for me. I am just aspiring for a birth in which I will be smeared by the dust of your devotees' feet. I can see that everyone here is simply full of Krishna consciousness. They do not know anything but Mukunda. All the Vedas are indeed searching after the lotus feet of Krishna. The devotees in Gokula, aware of the Lord's sweetness, are of two kinds. One, the followers, Anugataha, and the friends and kinsmen, Bandavaha. So, of the two kinds of dear devotees of the Lord, the Lord's friends and kinsmen are more exalted, for they are more firmly convinced that, quote, the Lord is mine. That's this possessiveness. It's an indication of the sweetness feature, but it's not like possessiveness like we think of possessiveness. It's the letting go of any other kind of shelter and having only one shelter. But it's not just shelter, like as a servant in the master. It's, he's mine. The relationship, it's very intense and very personal. Their exalted position is described in these words of Srimad Bhagavatam. Again, compliments of Lord Brahma. How greatly fortunate are Ananda Maharaj, the cowherd man, and all the other inhabitants of Brajabhumi. There is no limit to their good fortune, because the absolute truth, the source of transcendental bliss, the eternal supreme Brahman, has become their friend. It is said that even the less important, the least important of the residents of Gokula consider Lord Krishna as their friend. In this way, their friendship with Lord Krishna is glorified. And then comes this text 11 again, Kritapunya Punja. Here's the longer translation. In this way, all the cowherd boys used to play with Krishna, who is the source of the Brahman effulgence for the gyanis desiring to merge into that effulgence, who is the supreme personality of Godhead for devotees who have accepted eternal servitorship, and who for ordinary persons is but another ordinary child. The cowherd boys, having accumulated the results of pious activities for many lives, were able to associate in this way with the supreme personality of Godhead. How can one explain their good fortune? Again, this is very similar. This is Sanatana Goswami, the other was Shiva Goswami. They probably agreed on a lot of things. In this verse, the word satam means the gyanis before whom the Lord appears as the impersonal Brahman. You know, that's, there's another celebrated verse in the Bhagavatam when Krishna enters the wrestling arena. You familiar with that verse? It's something like 11 different personalities, categories, or types of persons. They all saw the same object, and they had a different realization of the same object. You know, the first ones mentioned were the wrestlers. They saw him as a thunderbolt. Not like, but like a thunderbolt. And Kamsa is death personified, and they were residents of Vrindavan that were there because Nanda had gone for paying his taxes, so they saw their beloved friend. The young girls saw him as Cupid personified, and so forth and so on. The same entity perceived differently according to their affection, naturally so. Yethamam prapadyante. The devotees of the Lord are extremely rare. The word dasyam gatanam means they who have attained service to the Lord. These persons are described in the following words of Bhagavatam 6:14-5. That's that same Maharishi Pariksit saying, who was this Ritrasura? O great sage among many millions who are liberated and perfect in knowledge of liberation, one may be a devotee of Lord Narayan or Krishna. Such devotees who are fully peaceful are extremely rare. But we can be sadhakas, but maybe not peaceful sadhakas. Thus, the devotees who worship the Supreme Personality Godhead are extremely rare. Srimad Bhagavatam uses the word maya shritanam, meaning persons who have neither knowledge of, devotion to, nor friendship for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and who thus do not understand Lord Krishna's spiritual form, do not understand that he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and do not love him, and who are thus not qualified to directly see the Supreme Personality of Godhead seeing before them, these persons think Lord Krishna is an ordinary human boy. Lord Krishna, so they see, but they don't see. Lord Krishna describes these persons in the following words of Bhagavad Gita 9:11. He calls them fools. Mudha, avajananti ma mudha, manushim tanamashatam. Fools deride me when I descend in the human form. They do not know my transcendental nature and my supreme dominion over all that be. In chapter 7, Krishna says, I am never manifest to the foolish and unintelligent. Naham prakashya sarvasya yoga maya samavrita. For them I am covered by my creative potency, yoga maya. And so the deluded world knows me not, who am unborn and infallible. I'm almost done. In these three quotes, It is seen that the Supreme Lord very rarely makes himself visible in this world. Still, even though he very rarely appears in this world, he personally enjoys pastimes, vijaru, with his dear friends who are filled with love for him. This truth fills Shukadeva Goswami with wonder. Or, these words may also be interpreted to mean, he very mercifully appears before even the ordinary persons who have taken shelter of Maya, Maya Shatanam, and before them he manifests his all-glorious spiritual form, which seems to be the form of a human being, and which is very rarely visible in this world. Still, ordinary persons cannot become the friend or kinsmen of the Lord in his rare, more rare, or most rare spiritual forms. With these friends, the Supreme Lord enjoys pastimes. Vijaru. Here the word Kritapunyapuncha means, quote, they are the best among persons who have performed many pious deeds to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Their friendship with the Lord is not like the friendship of ordinary persons. Their friendship for the Lord is glorious. How can the good fortune of these loving friends of the Lord be described? Even the ordinary people of Raja have great good fortune. Even the persons who have only seen Krishna have great good fortune. The good fortune they have attained is attainable by the great sages. The truth is described in the following words of Srimad Bhagavatam. That's this next verse, 10:12:12. Translation. Yogis may undergo severe austerities and penances for many births by practicing yama, niyama, asana, and pranayama, none of which are easily performed. Yet, in due course of time, when these yogis attain the perfection of controlling the mind, they will still be unable to taste even a particle of dust from the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What then can we describe about the great fortune of the inhabitants of Brajabhumi, Vrindavan, with whom the Supreme Personality of Godhead personally lived, and who saw the Lord face to face? These words affirm the truth that the friends of Lord Krishna were very fortunate. It's the theme over and over. This truth was also confirmed by Akura, which I'm not going to read. And then the final. When Lord Rama kidnapped Lord Krishna's friends and calves, Lord Krishna created new friends and calves. Rama then returned the original friends and calves, Srimad Bhagavatam 10:12:11, quoted from this anuchet, was spoken by Shukadeva Goswami. So you've been very patient hearing all these verses. Even they're spoken twice, and some of us have heard them probably 6 or 7 times. But the repetition helps in many ways. It helps make the force of the message that our acharyas are trying to convey to us very clear. I mean, we're accustomed to hearing, followers of Lord Chaitanya are accustomed to hearing the good fortune of the residents of Vrindavan and especially the gopis. And to appreciate their good fortune, we're encouraged to carefully hear and understand the first 9 cantos before going there. And then we're going to the 10th canto, we're hearing over and over and over again about cowherd boys, Mother Yashoda and the other elders, all the residents of Vrindavan, the cows, etc., etc., etc. They all just seeing Krishna there in ecstasy. The cows cry when they see Krishna in the coils of the Kaliya serpent, and they're greatly relieved, moo, when they see Krishna is freed from the coils of the Kaliya serpent. It's a place of ecstatic love, not just a place of, you know, people are nice, not just a mode of goodness place, not a heavenly realm. It's not Vaikuntha, it's not Ayodhya, it's Krishna Loka, very special. And Krishna manifests these pastimes to show the world. And our acharyas want us to hear it again and hear it again and hear it again and hear it again and hear it again. Of how exalted is this? So that part of the hearing it again and hearing it again is kind of like propaganda. But propaganda is something material. You hear something again and again. I forget, Prabhupada told the story. I forget the story. There was a conspiracy against a certain man, and everybody that saw him were supposed to say the same thing, and he heard it again and again, and he eventually accepted because he heard it again and again. That's propaganda. You know, anyway, it goes on all the time. Knowingly or unknowingly, it goes on all the time. But this is not propaganda. This is spiritual potency. It's like the Hare Krishna mantra, chanting it again. All the potencies there in each and every name, but you know, we have so many miles of dust covering the heart or the mirror of the mind that we need lots of chanting to clear away the dust. That doesn't reduce the potency. It's just, you know, we're really covered. And that's a symptom of this age of Kali. Whew. How unfortunate. Just today I was watching a recorded Srimad Bhagavatam class in Australia given by Srila Prabhupada when he visited there. And wow, he was on fire. I mean, there were some parts his voice was normal, but most of it, he was really on fire. And I think, this is me speaking, Australians like it. And Prabhupada knows his audience. I mean, the Australian, when it was public programs, they had to have kind of like a sergeant of arms, because the Australian public get really feisty and hostile. I mean, they didn't get violent, but you know, they're verbally just like accusatory. So Madhavisa had to stand there with his danda and, you know, stand strong and tall, and when people would say horrible things to Prabhupada, not necessarily about Prabhupada, but say horrible things, and he had to like throw some water over the audience and cool them out. But the devotees, you know, the devotees, it's my observation, they like that feistiness. So Prabhupada was on fire, speaking about the hellish condition. 99.9% are lowest of mankind, and would go on and on about what does that mean, and hear the symptoms. And there's an opportunity to get free from that, to build first class men and so forth. He wanted that because society needs that. And that's like how many Hare Krishna devotees are in the world compared to the world population? Or how many Hare Krishna devotees are in the city of Detroit compared to the city of Detroit and its suburbs population? Very few. And you know, it's a big challenge. You know, it's becoming Krishna conscious is a big challenge, and influencing others to become Krishna conscious is a big challenge. The means is being provided. It's an equal opportunity organization. Everyone can become, go back to Godhead. And we're hearing what that means and how rare it is. But the opportunity is being provided, and the call to urgency to give the message of Krishna consciousness. Receive and give. That's our program. And our goal is really high, but it's really sweet. And even with, because I've been reading the commentaries of our acharyas, like last night, wow, it was really philosophical. Profoundly philosophical, but when hearing that sound vibration, even if you can't catch all the details, you certainly feel you're getting the real story. You're getting the message of purification. Prabhupada said about Bhakti Siddhanta, there was a question. The devotees were beginning the printing of Bhakti Godhead magazine. Satsrup Marsh told us because he was the chief editor. Is it okay to print articles by Bhakti Siddhanta? Because Prabhupada was encouraging the devotees to write. And so is it okay to include articles of Bhakti Siddhanta? And Prabhupada gave a positive answer, but he said it should be just small sections because they won't understand. Then he said about himself, I would sit and listen to Bhakti Siddhanta and my brain was puzzled. But I had faith that even I don't understand all of what he's saying, just by hearing I'll become purified. So all these things, they're a little high and so forth, but the sound vibration is a purifying sound vibration. Just like the Hare Krishna mantra is a purifying sound vibration, the Srimad Bhagavatam is Krishna's literary form, and the 10th canto is a smiling face, and we're hearing the words of our acharyas that are illuminating the features of his smiling face, which brings bliss to all the residents of Vrindavan, even the cows, just seeing Krishna's smiling face. So hearing the words, hearing the sound vibration, it's like a spiritual bath. And however much we don't understand, that's quite okay. The cleansing is going on. What's the last line? Sarvatma snapanam Parambijayate Shri Krishna Sankirtanam. Sarvatma snapanam, that's what we're doing. Atma snapanam, the spiritual bath. And the features of Krishna start to emerge from that sound vibration. On Janmashtami day, I've been asked to give 5 different classes. And I'm thinking one of the classes, if not, because one of them is going to be for the Chinese devotees, and some of you had the chance to hear, they're all over the place when they ask questions. So I'm thinking to keep it simple, but one of the themes that keeps emerging is there are these different aspects of Krishna. There's his Aishwarya, shown by this. There's his karuna, his compassion, shown by this. And there's his madhurya. And the list of madhurya is really long. So because it's going to be a Janmashtami message, it's going to be morning our time and evening their time, I'm thinking of just going through one of those sections and just narrating the stories. When to hear the message of Krishna is to understand who is Krishna. As there's a song, to know him is to love him. So, you know, we're encouraged. All theology, monotheistic theology, encourages one to love God. Prabhupada says over and over. That's what religion is, to love God. But how are you going to love him if you don't know him? And when you start to know him, then you'll see how lovable he is. Then you can hang your attraction of love upon the person because you know who the person is. And the sweetness feature we're hearing over and over. That's the 10th canto. And he shows his other features. He shows the compassion side. He shows the majesty side. And predominating of overall is the sweetness side. And because that the section we've been reading is so much about the cowherd boys, I've been thinking, you know, they were really fortunate. How much of the day were they with Krishna? Like all day long. The parents are, you know, back at home. Of course, they were with him when he was a small boy. But, you know, anyway, they're with him all day long. They're seeing him, they're touching him. They're massaging his feet when he so-called gets tired. They're sitting having lunch with him. And they do it every day, all day long. They watch him kill demons and go, yay, nice going. Let's go back and tell our parents what happened today. So, in the various ways, seeing the reflection in a pond, so the image is distorted and then they make a face and then they laugh. Imitating the sounds of the forest animals and the birds and jumping up and swinging with the monkeys and just having a blast. And they're with Krishna the whole time. And Krishna's enjoying their love for him. Really a special place. Okay, so let's see if there's some discussion. It's already 7:37. Any questions from the room? And then we'll go to the online after that.
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj. So, you're mentioning how Bhagavad Gita mentions, like, fools, Krishna is saying, fools deride me, you know, or they consider him ordinary. I was just thinking in my case, and, like, while there is faith that Krishna is Supreme Personality of Godhead, and, you know, but I'm not fully appreciating, like, how you're mentioning the rarity of this opportunity, or not being able to fully take advantage of this rare opportunity, or not fully appreciating it. So is that because that Shraddha or faith is gradual, or is it because engagement in matter?
Engagement in matter has everything to do with paucity of faith. Engagement in an attached fashion has everything to do with paucity, weakness of faith. But someone who is spiritually advanced, they can be either with or without, and they're fine. They can be in abundance, and they can be in simplicity, and they're fine. So it's not due to contact with matter, it's the weakness of faith. And they're the insufficient, not yet matured stage of faith. Okay?
I have another question.
Okay.
Is it okay? So we were mentioning how Brahma is praying, you know, to take birth in Vrindavan. And we also hear from Uddhava, you know, he wants to be born as like a blade of grass.
Yeah.
When I visited Vrindavan for the first time in Yatra 2007 and to current day Vrindavan, there is a whole lot of change and there is so much of material opulence or, you know, the sky rises. And so I'm just trying to understand that prayer in the context of what's going on currently. So when we look at it, is it still that we have to understand that, yes, all this is there, but the pastimes of Krishna is still going on and it will go on eternally?
Yes. Let's go back in time. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went, none of the places were even known. He discovered Radhakund and he sent Rupa Goswami to discover the other places. Many of the places, there were others that did the similar thing. There's, you know, it's on and on. So it's just everything was unknown. It was all agricultural land and nothing was known. And when Prabhupada went, you know, where, what was it, the devotees were wondering, why does he want to be so far away? It was just agricultural fields in all directions. Now, you know, look at the thing now. So what we see, it's the ever-changing manifestation of the covering, but it's simply a covering. Bhaktivinoda Thakur's example, I'm sure you've heard this, is oil on the surface of water, and it spreads thin, but you can't see the water, you can only see the oil, but just beneath the water, beneath the oil is the water. You know, similarly, here's our bodies, but that's not who we are, but we see it, the bodies. And then the bodies get older and they go through changes, like Vrindavan is going through its changes. It's not Vrindavan. That's the covering. And according to the modes of nature, people are involved with the covering, generally trying to exploit. But, you know, there's faithful pilgrims and faithful residents. They're able, according to faith, able to access the real Vrindavan, not just the covering. So when we go there, we're somewhere in between, you know, that grossness and, you know, the realized position. So we'll experience what we experience according to faith. There's a verse that text 61 of Brahma Samhita, Yadrashi Yadrashi Shraddha, something something Tadrashi. Our faith will determine our realization. So that Vrindavan today is people don't have a lot of faith, they have a lot of materialism. And there's different kinds of materialism without listing the modes of nature are flourishing. Something else in the room?
knowledge, we hear of Krishna's different forms as a baby, as a young boy, and all that. I mean, it's with his pastime. So what is his real form in the spiritual world?
What is the which?
His actual form in the spiritual world.
Krishna's actual form?
Right. But the pastimes as a baby, so he says in a baby form, and then like that, I'm saying. So.
That question. I'll give you the same answer as this other topic we were discussing, which is, do not think of Krishna's form in terms of material form with three-dimensional space and time. We're accustomed to thinking like that. But don't think like that. It's not like over here is his baby pastimes, and then somewhere over there is his youth pastimes, and somewhere over there is some other pastimes, and he's got this bucket and that bucket, and you know, you can just go visit different buckets and see different pastimes or something like that. Don't think like that. How does it work? It's not time as we know it and space as we know it. That's how it works. Those are forms that Krishna manifests in the spiritual world. It's beyond our little minds. How does it work?
Thank you very much.
I mean, just say the same. Go ahead, but say the same thing. You know, what's an eternal pastime? Just simplify it. Aside from how are the different forms, how does this work? What's an eternal pastime? We can't think of an eternal pastime. We can think of a pastime within time, as we know it. But we can't think of an eternal pastime. It's unthinkable. You're like, here we are, assembled. And before we were somewhere, and now we're going to go somewhere. So here we are, within time. That's how we can think of activity. But what's a pastime that's eternal? An activity that's eternal? It's unthinkable. Yeah. We have to get out of the box of three-dimensional space and time as we know it. And we're not there. So we just have to, like, sound vibration can carry us there. That's our faith. There is such a thing as eternality. And in that realm of eternality, there's person. And with person, there's loving exchange, and that means activity, and there's variety. The limit is without. There is no limit to the variegatedness. Then comes his question. You know, then there's spools of rasa that unfold, and this variegated. But you know, so that's okay. My seatbelt is still fastened, but. You know, how does it work? You know, we don't have the spiritual technology capacity. How does it work? Just there's fundamental principles. And as we hear, consciousness becomes a little more elevated, covering becomes a little reduced, and we can start to get little glimpses of Krishna and his loving nature. And you know, that's the operative principle. It's his loving nature and engaging in loving dealings. And there's variegatedness within love. The parental affection. And then it just keeps expanding unlimitedly. Like we did this thing, you know, the entire spiritual world fits in so many square, you know, 32 square miles or something like that. But you know, just in front of Brahma, all these forms of Narayan and all their Shaktis, and you read it carefully, universes. I mean, come on. Look at the night sky. And that's just one universe. What to speak of sea universes right in front of you, along with forms of Narayan. So like, it's unlimited. There's no limit. So don't try to contain the unlimited with, you know, the faculties that we're endowed with. That's intelligent. Don't try to contain Krishna within the mind like that. We still contemplate. It's good to ask and try to understand and recognize our faculties need to expand before we can understand the unlimited, at least to some better extent than we can at present. Go ahead.
Maharaj, at times I see, like, I mean, when I hear the class, say on now Krishna's pastimes, I've been hearing. So, it's very sweet and beautiful to hear the glories and the amazing pastimes that Krishna had in Vrindavan. At the same time, there is also like a tendency over time that has developed for appreciation of the popular web series that are like available on different platforms. And it kind of becomes conflicting at times. It's kind of two different worlds. I'm able to appreciate both in a sense, like Krishna's pastimes, sweet, more towards reality, truth. But on the other side, the web series and the more modern or the more popular stuff, it gives some value, I feel, in the level of understanding. However, it also gives a lot of negative energy. It just becomes hard. Like, I feel it's a loop. Like, I keep going back to it. So, can you help me, with some pointers? How can I get out of that loop?
You like a kick in the seat of the pants? That's one way. I was visiting in Los Angeles and there was a young devotee that came up. And it was 3 days in a row. He said, Maharaj, what? My computer. I'm so addicted to, you know, bad stuff on my computer. What do I do? He said, give me your computer. No, I can't do that. I'm addicted. So, the illusory energy, it is powerful. The illusory energy has how many living entities under her whammy? And there's different features of the illusory energy. And it has everyone under a whammy, accepting that's it. and there's nothing more. And even if they have some faith in God, it's really, that's it, or there's nothing more. Piety has become so shameless and weak. So, you know, that's Kali Yuga. And you know, these other platforms, as you say, that's numero uno in modernity for capturing the hearts and the minds of souls that may have some piety left, and it just takes them away into La La Land. And it becomes addictive. It's not just you. You know, you're just honest about it. You know that there is an alternative. So, you know, what to do is see what's what. I'm just repeat something that Sridhar Swami, Prabhupada disciple Sridhar Swami, a sannyasi, he was in Bombay for umpteen years. He left his body with a disease, a liver disease. But I remember hearing him saying twice in the New York temple, for how many, what, he gave some number of years, how many years was there occupancy by foreign nations in India trying to erode the faith and the culture of the people of India, and it was unsuccessful. But when five-star TV came, it was very quick. And now, more quicker is what you're describing. It's, you know, it's insidious. It appears attractive, you know, without going into it. Video games and... I'm shocked when I haven't been traveling in a while, but when I travel, to see how many people on that plane are doing the brain-numbing things with their little device for hours. You know, the little guy that goes, and they do it for hours. Or the numbers, and then, you know, the just brain-numbing things. It's really sad. And it's like at least half the plane for the whole plane ride. And it can be, you know, hours. And that's all they do. They're addicted. Anyway, it's really sad. It's a very powerful media. So, recognize what it does. Like, you know, with any other kind of addiction. Alcohol, narcotics, or, you know, so you're not indulging in those things, but those things are addictive, and they can destroy your life. And this can also destroy your brain, you know, the higher faculties. So recognize what it is. It's got skull and crossbones on it, and don't drink it. Knowingly, don't drink it. So then, because if there's some addiction, then there's things people do when they're addicted. They regulate. That's one of the, you know, principles. But, you know, when there's an addiction, how do you regulate it? Like parents may have some rule in the home, you know, only this much time with the games. And then when the parents aren't watching, they're with the games because it's addictive. It's acceleration of Kali Yuga. So if you recognize what it is, you know, not just put on the brake pedal, turn off the ignition, get out. Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam chatatan te kalevaram. When you have discretionary time, where does your mind go? To you know, what's important to you, and these addiction things is where the mind goes. And where is that going to take you? In the quality of your life today and then after this life. So it's like sobering stuff. Natevidu Svartakatimi Vishnu. I'm sure you've heard that phrase. It's from Prahlad. Prabhupada quotes it a zillion times. People don't know the goal of life or how to achieve it. And if one knows the goal of life and how to achieve it, we just read this, where Krishna is saying to Uddhava, and people who know the goal of life and still they want material things, how this is most unfortunate. So,
thank you.
Just steer in a different direction. Find something that you can resonate that fills in that discretionary time space that's wholesome, and do more of that. And stay away from the other, or minimally, you only this much time and nothing more, and that's it. But if you can't control the mind and senses, you're sitting duck for Maya. It's Maya's beckoning. Come on and enjoy me. Prabhupada, come on and enjoy me so I can kick you in the face. Okay?
Just one
part. One more?
So when I try to follow like instruction like very seriously, I also see like the structure stays okay for some time, and then I get a sense that I'm kind of in a prison of my own where I'm like kind of restricting myself. So then kind of the tussle starts between that, where do I draw the line?
What you're describing, you'll find a very nice answer to what you're describing in chapter 25 of Canto 3. Devahuti to Kapila Dev, devotional service. And chapter 29, similarly. You know, she says, I mean, I'm paraphrasing, I get it. I'm not this body. And, you know, the knowledge, it carries me up. But after some time, the modes of nature pull me back down again. Is it really possible to become free from the modes of nature and our conditioning? And his answer is yes. Through devotional service. That is awakened through sadhu sangha. And then describes the process. So that's also knowledge, but knowledge isn't enough, because knowledge can take you up, but it has to go beyond jnana mishra bhakti. It has to become bhakti in association with devotees. So we, it's not optional. And through the association of devotees, be, as you're doing, you're being transparently honest, and you'll get strength just in the association. So protect yourself in the company of devotees, and follow, not just some time. I mean, it's so sustained effort, that's brahminical work. And the other is anishtita bhakti. It's standard. Don't, you know, it's not like shame on you, you're in the anishtita bhakti stage. It's just standard. You just keep striving to go to the nishtha and keep going. Okay.
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj. I have a question about, you know, astrology, how it affects a devotee who is following a path of Krishna consciousness, especially, you know, like if some the planets influencing are like Rahu, Ketu, which are evil planets and which influence the mind and things like that. So how do we, you know, how much importance do we give to that? And as a very basic devotees, like, I know that if we, I mean, we are not fully surrendered to Krishna, so, you know, how much importance, you know, do they influence us or, like how do we take deeper shelter?
Questions.
Okay.
We don't. Prabhupada's answer to the question about astrology is, if you know it's going to rain, you may carry an umbrella. Astrology just says these are influences. And this influence conjoined with that influence creates a certain, you know, some energy is coming your way. But it doesn't govern who you are and how you make your choices. It lets you know if it's going to rain or if it's going to be sunshine. Or what it's going to be. And then you can decide, I may do something. Now, it's not, we don't govern our lives by astrology. Vaishnavas do not govern their lives by astrology. We may become aware of this, da 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 da. And then, okay, that I know if it's going to rain today. Or for this period of time, I'm passing through this main period, and the symptoms are going to be like this. That's just like that's what's acting upon me based upon my past activities, embodied within the configurations of planets, it's coming my way. Okay. And then you're aware of influences and you move forward with those influences, you know, acknowledging the influences. Supposing somebody knows, oh, you're going to have some health problems. Okay, I'm going to have some health problems. So I'm going to be careful with my, I'm not going to be ruled by astrology. I'm going to be ruled by Krishna. So I'm going to pass through some health problem periods and I'm not going to be surprised when it happens and sure enough here it comes and, or whatever it is, whatever it is. And periods of, that are more productive and periods that are more conflict ridden and periods where it's this and periods where it's that. Okay, that's the acceptance. Now, I'm not going to deviate from taking shelter of Krishna. I'm going to acknowledge some influences and move towards Krishna with acknowledging those influences. We're not ruled by it. If it's cold, you put on a jacket. If it's raining, you may carry an umbrella. You may not. You're going to go about your business and go to where you're going because, not because I'm not going to go because, now if it's monsoon season, you may not travel. Or if it's coronavirus, you may not get in an airplane. But it's not going to rule your life. You know, astrologers are having really good time talking about why what's going on is, you know, from astrology. Now, how to become stronger, that's, you know, this how-to question again. Follow the process of bhakti very nicely, and that's how-to. starting with sadhu sangha, right? Okay. And then with sadhus you do what sadhus do, bhajana kriya, together. Okay, we don't want to neglect our online people. They feel neglected if we don't pay attention to them.
This question is from Sasireka Devidasi Mataji. Bhakti is so powerful that one can go back to Godhead just by doing devotional services. But when it comes to love, when it comes to love Krishna, we need to know him. How do we know him by reading, By reading Shastras or by doing Bhakti? What if we don't try to know him and just do Bhakti and Krishna will reveal himself because anyway he is inconceivable? Also, I feel when I try to know him, I get very puzzled. I have experienced more. I try to know him, more I feel limited. More I feel limited.
Limited. Well, it's good to feel limited, because we are. But it's not that reading about him and bhakti are two different things. We're not cultivating knowledge, we're cultivating bhakti. When we read about Krishna, or read spoken by Krishna, it's cultivation of bhakti. There's not two buckets or two separate things. Now, gyanis may read to know things, and devotees read things to be connected with Krishna in awareness of him and loving, lovingness. The inquisitiveness, jigyasu, is a necessary component. Because if we're not inquisitive, then the answer to the question that we weren't asking could be right in front of us and we won't even recognize it because we weren't asking. It's recommended, rather, to be inquisitive. And inquisitive doesn't mean to become a gyani. Inquisitive means to be inquisitive. And so when you read, it's I want to understand Krishna. And if you feel tiny when you try to understand Krishna, that's good, because we are. In fact, the more tiny you feel, the better. Because then you're a receptive person for Krishna's descending mercy. They say, conversely, a person that's not humble, there may be some doership or some pride or something like that, and the mercy of Krishna doesn't enter so easily. Next.
Question from Sanchari Mataji. This is from the morning class. Seeking clarification on Krishna's uppercut form that entered the hearts of the residents of Vraja.
Let's take this question tomorrow morning.
The question is, what is this form relation to the Supasun?
Let's do it tomorrow morning, because that's not our topic this evening. It's the morning topic.
Question from Amara Mataji. Krishna reciprocates according to devotees' surrender, and surrender depends on faith. So if I do not have complete faith yet, then will Krishna give his full protection, or will it be in proportion to my faith?
Yes, in proportion. He gives his full protection to the residents in Vrindavan. We'll be discussing that tomorrow morning also. When Narada is encouraging Krishna to go to Mathura, this principle is the principle that he's, one of the principles he's massaging. We'll discuss tomorrow.
Question from Uttama Bhaktadas Prabhu. How important is it to know and understand the nature of material nature in order to appreciate the spiritual nature of Krishna besides directly engaging with spiritual nature?
I really like Sadaputta's remark when he begins his video on mysteries of the sacred universe. He says, how we view the world has a profound influence in how we view ourselves. So it's not essential to become Krishna conscious to know the universal form and Sankhya yoga and so many things that are important. It's not that you can't go back to Godhead or can't awaken your love for Krishna without knowing those things in minute detail. One can be very simple in heart and understand Krishna as your shelter. But then on the other side, who is Krishna anyway? I may have a fair to partly cloudy picture of who Krishna is anyway. Or I may be carrying so many conceptions, meaning misconceptions or distorted conceptions of Krishna. So it's good to hear those things. And try to understand those things. But it's, the essence is the merciful nature of Krishna. And through understanding the merciful nature of Krishna, we'll come to understand so many other things about him. So, I hope that addresses the question. If not, she can send another message to clarify. That's it?
That's it.
Okay. Anything else in the room? Yeah.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. So my question is, I don't know if this is even possible, but can we align career goals and spiritual goals? Is that a possibility?
Oh, yeah. Oh, please do.
So then, how can we do that?
Well, Guru Sadhu Shastra references help the understanding the what, and then what spiritual goals are, and how to align the material goals according to your psychophysical nature with scriptural principles or dharmic principles. And then the other part of alignment is your heart. That is, to want to do this for the pleasure of Krishna. That's the course correction feature. By course correction feature, I mean we're conditioned. And we may not have a clear idea of the spiritual goal, and we may not have a really clear idea of who we are. Even our psychophysical nature of who we are. You follow?
Yeah.
Yeah. So then that has to be aligned with the heart. I'll say the same thing. Anyway, I can say the same thing in a few different ways. But how do we make the alignment is there's introspection to understand who you are. There's looking at scripture that gives guidelines and standards and light into our life. And then there's, the fundamental truths, who you really are and who you, that your Krishna's part and parcel meant for his eternal service. And then there's our spiritual goals and our material goals, and there's that alignment. It's a refinement and a continuous adjustment process. Understanding the spiritual goals better, understanding your psychophysical nature better, understanding your heart better, and continuing. So it's not a lazy person's assignment. Spiritual life is not for lazy people. It takes work.
Thank you.
But guidance, Guru Sadhu Shastra guidance. Okay?
Thank you, Maharaj. more question if...
Okay, I'm ready.
Okay. So, I think in... excuse me if I'm misrepresenting this, but in Bhagavad Gita, in chapter 2, it tells like demigod worship is not for intelligent people. But in chapter 3, it's like they encourage demigod worship as like a course to spiritual path. So
no, not a course to spiritual path. The course to elevation. Urdvam gacchanti sattvasta. You can go upwards by demigod worship. But the upwards isn't the goal.
Okay.
The goal is, Krishna says, Abrahma bhuvana loka punar arvartanurjana. Don't go for the higher position or stay away from the lower position, because in any of them, repeated birth and death take place. So, worship of the demigods delivers temporary and limited benefits. But persons in the mode of goodness go to the demigods for those things, instead of the non-devotee, the unregulated people that go for those things anyways. Material progress and artha without dharma. So that demigod worship leads to elevation, but it's not recommended in Bhagavad Gita. It's not recommended. It just says that's the destination of those who engage in demigod worship. Two places it says don't. Okay. Avidhi purvakam. It is done without proper knowledge. Avidhi. Vid means to know. Without proper knowledge. Okay. Okay. Looks like we're, yes.
I'm hoping to frame this question properly. I'm struggling. When I hear that the reciprocation of from Krishna is proportionate to our surrender or our faith, the question that arises in me is, why is this mathematical?
No, it's not mathematical. It's devotional.
Then the other thing is, Krishna is an independent Supreme Lord,
yeah,
and very kind and compassionate. So why is that only proportionate? Why is he not giving full protection then?
He's ready. We're not. He doesn't interfere. It's his nature. He doesn't interfere. We have free will, and he honors our free will.
So we are saying that, okay, I want only limited protection when we...
Yeah. I mean, we're not like got our arms across our chest saying, don't tread on me. You know, that there's this phrase saying, the independent-minded, don't tread on me expression. So we're not, you know, but our spirit is rebellious. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here. I mean, something that should make it really easy for you to understand is parenting. You may have all kinds of nice wishes for your children, but being a loving father, you don't impose your will on them. They wouldn't, you'd probably get some pushback if you tried to do that as well, but you don't do that. You express, but you don't impose. And Krishna is loving. If you're a loving father, then what about Krishna? You know, look, you're the father. You can just like put your foot down and smash him. Yes, Maharaj told me to smash you. So. No, Krishna doesn't impose himself. He could. He doesn't. He does what he does. There's options, free will options, and he's encouraging us, don't choose those. Choose these. But your parents do that.
Okay. I was thinking prediction was like kind of just physical prediction and like that, but it's prediction of us in whole.
It's certainly a holistic picture, but love means voluntary. Love doesn't mean, look, I'm Bhagavan, and I'm telling you, love me. Or else. And by the way, there's nowhere else. It's only one thing. It's not his nature. He's loving. He's holding us by the hand and sending messages and messengers and, you know, banging us in the side of the head every now and then when we're, but he doesn't interfere. He wants our love. He doesn't just, so, and he gives us minute freedom. And it's real. It's eternal. It's our relationship with him.
Helping me understand.
Huh?
Thank you for helping me understand.
Okay.
There are a few more questions.
Few more questions, and we're going to end after the few more questions.
So, this is a follow-up question from Amara Mataji. When Krishna knows that one is striving to take his full shelter, although not mature in faith yet, does he give full protection?
Yes. But what that full protection looks like and what it feels like may not be your idea of full protection. Next.
Sanchari Mataji asks a question on behalf of someone. The question is, Srila Prabhupada had the ability to speak so profoundly in different ways according to the nature of the audience.
Yes.
Because of his disciples' explanations, we are able to understand what Srila Prabhupada was saying, especially his more controversial statements. This is because his disciples know his heart. How do we, who do not know his heart like that, gain this ability when the time comes that we don't have direct contact, direct association of the disciples of Srila Prabhupada?
Well, you, in response specifically to what you're doing, you're reading multiple biographies of those that had that intimate association, and that's how you will understand, through those narrations of those who had his intimate association. And, as you noted, because you shared this with me, the very same incident, this one experienced it this way, that one experienced it that way, and another one experienced it another way, which tells you something about, you know, perceptions, but also the nature of the relationship of this one, that one, and the other one. So, and then you continue reading like that, and you get, you know, a picture of the ISKCON world at the time when Prabhupada was present. And you'll understand him better tomorrow than you do today. And even without the physical presence of his associates, his direct disciples. It's like, how do we understand Lord Chaitanya? Through those that associated with Lord Chaitanya. There's biographies and we read them. Okay, next.
That's
it. Prabhupada ki jai.